Let's talk rookie performances from Jordan Horston, Haley Jones, among others. In segment two, we'll go back and forth on some of our favorite non-stars, star players to begin the WNBA season. Lotham Women's Basketball starts now.
Ogumba Wallet for the win.
You are Locked On Women's Basketball, your daily podcast on women's basketball.
Welcome. You are Locked On Women's Basketball. My name is Hunter Cruz. I'm a Saturday host covering the WNBA draft and women's basketball at large. Thanks for making Locked On Women's Basketball your first listen every day. And remember, Locked On Women's Basketball is free and available on all platforms, including YouTube. I'm joined by my co-host, Em Adler. Em is a beat writer for Seattle Storm and heads our written coverage of the WNBA draft at thenexthoops.com. I'm also joined by my co-host, Lincoln. He covers the WNBA draft and contributes to our WNBA rookie scale coverage at the Next. You can follow him at Dovienya _ on Twitter. So among the four rookies we're going to talk about today, let's start with Seattle Storm rookie wing Jordan Horston. Through two games, the former Tennessee Lady Vol is averaging 4 points on sub-25% shooting from the field. So starting with you, Em, what has been like your – what have you seen from Horston so far this season, good and bad?
The process has been mostly good. The results have not. I mean, let's start with the obvious. She's shooting 4 for 18 from the field, which is, roughly speaking, not what you want. As Lincoln pointed out to us just before we started, she has a PER of 2.7. PER, for those who don't know, it's a very bad stat. You should never use it. But it's essentially scaled to points per game. So a PER of 2.7 is equivalent to playing 36 minutes and averaging 2.7 points. That is sub-Brianna Turner. Tier. Her defense has looked quite good. You know, there you might see some people complaining about her matchups, but look, like, she's going to play the three and the four at the pro level. If she's not going to be able to hit a bunch of threes, then she's going to be playing the four in Seattle in these four out, even five out lineups. And she's holding up well. She did a great job for someone in their first career game having to defend Asia Wilson. She did a good job using physicality and just disrupting her rhythm without fouling too much. She's been about as good as she was at college level, just reading the passing lanes and being able to disrupt offenses. There's a little bit, you know, less defensive playmaking production, but that's mostly just because, you know, first of all, she's getting a feel for the WNBA level. You can't expect someone to come in and do the same things that they did in college, but also, like, you know, she's running out there a little bit with the starters and a little bit with bench units, and these bench units are, to be frank, kind of terrible. That's kind of the point of Seattle this season, is their bench units are going to be terrible because they're trying to figure out who can and can't be a WNBA level contributor. But it's asking a lot of Horston right now, and, you know, she is doing a lot. This is really similar to what we saw the first couple of years at Tennessee, where didn't have the best surrounding talent despite where her teammates went in the draft, just not the best surrounding talent. And, you know, she's kind of asked to be a lot in terms of generating shots and finishing them. Things are going to come along. The process has been really solid. We've seen a lot more attacking downhill, and she's getting deeper into the paint than she did at Tennessee when Tamar Key was healthy. So I would say, all things considered, it's positive results.
And on Friday, we saw a moment at the end of the first half where Jewel Lloyd was in her ear. Pretty tough for a minute there. And I think that's a super beneficial veteran to have with this Seattle team, and specifically because, like, moving forward to someone like Ivana Dojkic, I want to give it to you, Lincoln. What have you seen from her this season? I think we saw some flashes in the first game against Las Vegas, but she had that really tough finish on Friday, which some intriguing flashes from her as well.
Yeah, I think that she's looked passable and like a WNBA player to this point in the season, which is honestly what you want out of someone that you're bringing in, to see what they can do. They're looking for like a point guard of the future, and I don't know if she's looked like that, but she's definitely looked like someone who belongs on a WNBA court. She has some ability off ball. She can throw some good passes. She's looked solid on the ball, and I haven't really noticed her defense too much, which is a bit of good and a bit of bad. It means that she's not been like fantastic, but she hasn't been the worst defender on the floor in any of those lineups either, which if you're someone coming into the WNBA for the first time, even if Doikic is a little bit older than a lot of the other rookies out there, she does look like someone who's been playing professional basketball for a longer time.
And she's got some things working in her favor. You know, she has, reports vary on her size, but she's around 6 foot, which, you know, for playing the one of the two is real good size there. She's taken some more difficult spot up threes and nailed them. She's passed up a couple more open looks. There was one last night that ended up with a good result for Seattle, but she sort of passed up a semi-open corner three. So just looking for her to get more her feet under her with more minutes and just get a rhythm here, I think is the biggest thing.
And I think one thing with her minutes is I think they're going along slowly with Jade Melbourne's development, being one of the youngest players in the league. I'm super interested to see whenever she's going to start getting more run with this tank, because I think as the season goes along, they should give her more run and see what she can do as well on the ball. And then let's talk about Maddie Seagrass as well. It's been iffy for her. I think she's been targeted a little bit on defense. So for you, Em, what have you seen from Maddie Seagrass through her two games?
Yeah, I mean, we were talking about this yesterday. There's some issues with her on the court right now, and I think that mostly speaks to what Dallas needs from her. With Tierra McCowan out last night, with Diamond Shields out for at least the early run of the season, Maddie Seagrass is not playing the probably around 10 minutes a game, 12 minutes a game role that head coach Leticia Trammell had planned out for her. We could see by the preseason usage that the idea was, you know, she would be sort of in the second wave of backups coming off the bench when they were doing kind of like a line change and doing a different style with their bench unit in those sort of early second quarter slash like late third quarter, early fourth quarter minutes when they wanted to give a sort of change of pace. She was getting usage in the way that she did at Villanova, you know, give it to her in the low mid post, let her go to work, let her sort of quickly pass out of that if she doesn't see anything, because she's smart with the ball like that. But with Diamond out, with Tierra McCowan out, they need her to be more of just the traditional big because they are running a smaller front court with Natasha Howard and Sadie Sabally, and she's basically the next one up because Awakpe is really more of a she's more of a perimeter wing at this point. That's not good for her game, having to play like a pick and roll big at this point in time. It's going to be good for her development that she's getting these reps, but we're not seeing results. And you could see yesterday there were just some real problems with how she was doing on the roll, with how she was able to navigate sort of the interior space without the ball that just weren't to her style. I know Lincoln noticed a lot of that.
Yeah, there's definitely going to be problems for someone coming in who just averaged almost 30 points a game at the collegiate level with extremely high usage, playing almost every minute of the game for Villanova, to come in and be the fourth or fifth option every time that she's on the court. It's never going to be
Well, when you
an
put it
easy
that way.
transition, especially for someone who's not like going to get on ball usage at this point in her WNBA career. It's going to be a really tough transition for someone who we all noted that she was going to be undersized to play the four at the WNBA level, and that has definitely looked right to me. The other thing that's caught my eye with Seagrass is I had some questions about her tendencies to catch and hold the ball at Villanova, and those are definitely showing up more now in the WNBA, where the defense is quicker and bigger and longer, and it's kind of killing the flow of Dallas's offense when she's getting the ball at the elbow and spinning and grabbing the ball and holding it for 2 or 3 seconds. And I think that making quicker decisions is an easy way for her to increase her utility.
Another rookie let's talk about is Haley Jones. So with her, the biggest thing that I think has kept her from playing a lot of minutes, especially with Daniel Robinson out, is the defense. She's picked up some fouls. She struggled athletically, I would feel like, just the translation from Stanford to playing inside Tanisha Wright's pace system. So I would say with her, it's been the defense. She struggled on the perimeter. She struggled to navigate screens, and also on offense. I thought in this last game against Minnesota, we saw some pick and roll flashes. I remember there was one moment, I think it was the second quarter or third quarter, Somewhere within there was like a high pick and roll. Minnesota threw two in the ball, and then she made a really good read on the roller. So I think that was another good moment. And then she also had another high pick and roll. Cheyenne Parker reversed the screen. She was able to get downhill, get to a layup. But I think if she doesn't have a screen, her offense in the half court is pretty much non-existent. I don't buy the jumper right now. I think there's a lot of mechanical concerns with the jumper. So I always thought her translation was going to be tough immediately, given how her game was at Stanford, how much her game was predicated on being in transition. But what have y'all seen from her so far?
You know, you say the defense is bad, but consider this. The offense is also bad. I mean, that's the issue with Haley Jones at the moment, that you just basically can't play her and also win those minutes, at least not with the ball remotely finding her. You mentioned the layup, and that was a nice thing. That was a nice flash to see, but that was only really encouraging insofar as it was, oh, hey, she's athletic enough to play at this level because she looks competent at this point. Because that was just absolutely horrendous defense by the Lynx. There were three help defenders who should have been in her way, and they all sort of pointed at each other and were like, hey, why weren't you in Haley's way? You know, she had some burst there and got downhill, but again, there was nothing really she did there other than say, oh, cool, the lane's open. Let me see what happens. There have been a couple passing flashes. There have also been more turnovers than assists for a very clear reason up to this point. She's not commanding any respect really on either side of the ball. She bit on a Ariel Powers pump fake in the mid-range and got absolutely destroyed to the rim and still gave up an and one, which it is hard to find a more extreme example of perimeter defense in which you are trying to take away a shot that a defense would love for AP to take, and you end up giving up the worst possible play. Like, the process is bad and the results are bad here.
And that mid-range jumper was like a corner deep mid-range two as well.
Yep.
It wasn't like a high percentage shot you're gonna see.
No, it would have been like an 18-foot jumper.
Yeah. But after the break,
one thing that I would say is that these are all really small sample size of these four players we just talked about. The one that's played the most minutes is Ivana Jokic at 23 minutes total as a WNBA player. So that's just something to keep in mind.
Yeah.
Yes, so, but just because they're small samples doesn't mean that we can't be extremely overconfident in our analysis of those very small samples.
All right, so after the break, we'll talk about some of our favorite players to watch so far this season and highlight some big improvers from 2022. And we're back. I'm your host, Hunter Cruz, and appreciate you for making Locked On Women's Basketball your first listen every day. So I'm going to throw it to you first, Lincoln. Who are some players you'd like to highlight from your film watching so far this season?
Yeah, two that have really stood out to me are Satu Sabli in the Dallas Wings and Suge Sutton in Phoenix. Both of them are playing some really good offense right now, and it's not something I really expected from Suge Sutton, who I hadn't really watched very much of. She was a guard at Texas and played a couple games in the Wubble for the Mystics, but coming out of the preseason, I was encouraged by her shot making, and that's continued into the regular season so far. She's played really well for the Mercury. She's provided a huge spark for them coming off the bench. Her shot creation has been really, really important for them in some of those lineups that are lacking spacing and shot creation, especially. And she's just been a huge part of keeping their bench lineups afloat. And then for Satu Sabli, she's been, to me, the Wings' most complete and best player through their first couple games. She's scored the ball well. She's defending. She's flying all over the court. She's making really good passes. She had 11 points, 5 rebounds, and 4 assists at halftime last night and has just continued to grow. She's been really good in the WNBA when she's been healthy. And she had a really good season with Fenerbahce in Turkey this season, overseas. And to see her continue to find her stride and continue to grow as a player has been really awesome to see so far this season.
Yeah, I mean, we have seen her, and we talked about this on earlier pods, especially when we did that under that 25 and under draft. She is one of the best players in the league when she's healthy, and we've seen flashes of all this kind of stuff over the years. And I think most impressively, even as she's only been available for, I think, somewhere on the order of like 40% of Dallas's games the past couple years. We've seen year-over-year improvements even as she has had that limited availability, which is really rare for players who are in that sort of developmental stage but getting injured as much as she has. And this year it's continued. You know, a lot of this is because she's healthy and getting extended run, but I think I think to your point as well, like, she's also just getting better at the things she was already good at and continuing to refine her ability to take all these incredible raw skills, raise the efficiency level to somewhere where it's okay, we want to keep doing this, and also be able to do it in a scalable and shot creative way. It's pretty remarkable what she's doing despite having missed so much time.
And who'd you want to talk about, Em?
Yeah, I had a few players to shout out. You know, sticking with the theme of players who have been around, who we've seen before, Rebecca Allen is someone who I think was underrated for a bit in New York. She is someone who was one of the rare players in the W who really solidly fits the 3-and-D scalable role player role that we are always clamoring to have more of. She's one of the better perimeter defenders, really versatile, provides secondary rim protection. And we've always known that she's been able to do this, hit movement shots. But it's really fun, and I'm going to be writing about this tonight. It'll come out tomorrow morning in my Sunday Notes column. It's just really fun what Stephanie White and Connecticut is doing with their lineup versatility. And she's playing a lot of two, a lot of three, even some four at different times, depending on how fouls and game flow are working for Connecticut. And she's just able to contribute in a bunch of different roles there. And she's just getting off shots. She's flying all around the court. She's doing whatever she can on defense, depending on what her teammates are and what the opponent's lineup are. And it's just really fun to see her in such a well-utilized role. Sticking with Connecticut, I've been really impressed by Olivia Nelson-Adada, as I know both of you are. She's someone who, Hunter, I know you and I specifically really, really liked her defense coming out of college. We're a little bit higher on her than most people, and we're definitely higher on her than where she was drafted. And to see, you know, she had more scoring flashes in Los Angeles than we kind of expected last year, given the limitations in her game at Connecticut. But the process, you know, has continued for her, just being able to make it happen in the post this year when she gets the ball and with good position. And the defense has continued to be really impactful, being able to navigate in space and drop in sort of medium hedges. I've really enjoyed what she's been able to do, and she is, at this point, I would say she's comfortably one of an above average rim runner, and she gives Connecticut one of the best backup centers in the league. And it's one of the reasons why Connecticut is running out, you know, eight players a game who are all pretty much starting caliber and able to do so much versatility. And then someone who, you know, we've talked about a lot, I have a running, mostly joking thread about her Rookie of the Year candidacy, but this is Morgan Birch. Connecticut, due to injuries, she's their starting four, but maybe she should be their starting four when Izzy Harrison comes back, just for spacing reasons. You know, we loved her preseason tape. She's moving so damn well in space. She's hitting threes really well. She knows how to screen and navigate space. Her rolling and her roll angles are great. Honestly, I feel very comfortable saying at this point, Morgan Birch is one of the top 10, maybe even top five cutters and off-ball movers in the league. Her defense is good enough, and she uses her length without fouling too much. She fouls a bit, but not too much, to be able to just make an impact and generate some blocks and some steals on that end. And again, her off-ball movement, both in the interior, much like Jahira Austin, but also around the perimeter on her rolls and her lifts and lowers, is enough. It's enough that it keeps generating spacing in an offense that really doesn't have as many spacers as it looks like. And she just keeps getting open shots. Whenever their drivers can't get to the rim, she's always there. It's really, really impressive what she's able to do for that offense.
And so my first shout out here is, it's not technically a player, but I want to shout out James Wade for getting Courtney Williams to cut out those deep twos. And then also shout out for his international scouting. Pretty incredible stuff he does. We'll see it on the NBA side with Miami, where they're better at finding these steel type players in drafting, and that's what James Wade has done. I think we have been very we've been critical of the stuff he's done trade wise, but in free agency, trying to find players in the margins, he's done incredible there. And then also, I want to give a shout out to Lexi Brown. It can't be understated how many injuries LA has had. LA has had so many injuries. I believe they have eight players right now due to their illnesses. They also have Katie Lou out due to a pregnancy. We also have Neca was out their last game. But in that role, we saw Lexi Brown take on a pretty larger role. In the two games so far, she's averaging 14.5 points, a career best 3.5 assists, 3.5 rebounds, and she's shooting 55% from three, and then also 71% from two. We saw a couple pick-and-roll possessions last game. Those really well, being able to navigate on-ball, navigate different defensive coverages that the opponent was sending at her. I thought displaying the stuff she does off the ball, one of the best off-ball players in the league, given her ability to spread it out, because I believe last season she was one of the best deep three-point shooters in the league, non-star deep three-point shooters in the league. So I'm surprised that a couple of teams in free agency probably should have gave her a multi-year contract and gave her the bag.
She's so underpaid. It's crazy.
I don't understand it, because there's some teams in this league that could benefit from having her shooting on a larger role, and we're seeing that now with LA, because the last few seasons her role has been just this kind of 3-and-D type thing we talk about. And with her, I think
it would be an incredible alleviation to the Mystics' spacing problems and offensive shot generation problems.
Or Atlanta. I mean, Atlanta as well. I mean, those teams can't really shoot right now. So, yeah, I think with those two situations, and also I think what we've seen with LA so far this season, I've been pleased with what they've done. I don't know, what have y'all seen from LA as well?
The Sparks are fun, and they're good, which is a great combination. You have to give a lot of credit to Kurt Miller there. He's done a really good job of putting that roster in a place to succeed, putting those players in positions where they're comfortable. And a lot of that has been like putting Lexi Brown in positions to move off the ball, catch the ball on the move and shoot, which is something she's really good at, and she's proven that she can do at a high level. Carly Samuelson has come in on that hardship contract, and she has looked like a solid WNBA player. Her shooting has been really valuable for them, and their ability to play so many different types of lineups with their big room has really caught my eye early in the season too. Whether it's Shanae and Neca, or it's Hamby, and Azarai Stevens isn't even healthy yet, but that will just give them more options at the four and the five.
Yeah, there've been a number of changes from how Derek Fisher was running this team, obviously. And you know, there are some issues that we can take, and we probably will end up taking a couple weeks when this stuff starts to actually matter in terms of how they've managed the roster at the margins. Joyner Holmes should be the one in the hardship. Carly should be on the rest of the season, and that's going to really matter in a couple of weeks. But at this point, you know, Kurt Miller is playing to win, or he's coaching to win these games. He is coming out with he's come out with different game plans in the first couple of games, offensively and defensively, to try and force their opponents into different stuff. And it has worked wonderfully in both games. He's getting full buy-in from these players. This is what he does. He gets buy-in and he gets players to play hard. I still weep for the fact that we aren't getting this lineup with a healthy Stephanie Talbot, with a Katie Lou Samuelson able to play on the court, because I am truly curious what that would have looked like with this team. But for now, you know, they are as weird it is to say for a team like the Los Angeles Sparks, they're a scrappy team, and it's fun.
And shout out Kurt Miller as well for being the best floor-raising coach in the league. Very good at that. But after the break, we'll dive into the Phoenix Mercury. They're 1-2 to start the season. We have some takes, so we'll get into that after the break. All right, so yeah, like I said, the Phoenix Mercury are 1-2 to begin the WNBA season, picking up again a win against the tanking Minnesota Lynx on Thursday.
In a game where it really looked like they were going to blow it.
Right.
It really looked like they were going to blow it.
I want to give the floor to you, Em. I know you have some takes on just the coaching situation, and then also just the general roster construction as well.
I mean, there are a number of ways to go with this. I mean, there's the fact that their best player last year, their best player last year, Skylar Diggins-Smith, has throughout her WNBA career has not necessarily made things easier on herself, but she's also played in Dallas and Phoenix, which are possibly the two worst places just to play in terms of the management that you're going to get there. They've taken their best player, Scouting Smith, and they've alienated her to the point where it was remarkable that she was really playing for all that last year before she finally had to go at the end of the season. She's, you know, on the pregnancy. She is currently out because she's pregnant right now. And over the offseason, it seemed like general manager Jim Pittman was counting on her to return at some point this season. That's not going to happen. I'm not giving you any original reporting here. It's not going to happen. She's not going to play for them. They don't deserve to have her play for them. Speaking of things they don't deserve, they don't deserve Brittany Griner at this point. They have built a roster that asks Brittany Griner to score 22 a night, grab 9 boards a night. They need 4 blocks from her a night, or else this team is going to completely suck. They knew full and well that she was back for the season. They could have built this roster in any different ways. They could have spread some money around in different contracts. They could have not brought back Diana Taurasi on a supermax. They probably couldn't have, but they could have threatened something other than doing that, because, I mean, she wasn't worth a supermax last year. She wasn't worth a supermax the year before. We knew she wasn't going to be worth a supermax this year. They could have done something other than paying Shea Petty a large sum of money to rehab her Achilles for most of the season. Look, given where Shea Petty is in her most recent update, she said last week she was playing 5-on-5 for the first time. You know what that means? That means that she is still about 2 months away from being able to give actual minutes on a nightly basis. And beyond that, that means that she's about 3 months away from actually being able to be a comfortable WNBA player who can do something approaching what she could have done before. And we could have done something other than guaranteeing Mikaela Onyenwere, a player who can't really do anything well for her height, over $80,000 next year. We could have done something other than taking the proof of concept last year that Brianna Turner can play a hell of a center with some size around her in a sort of 4-out lineup. We could have done something other than that, other than shoving her back at the 4 spot and wondering if everything was going to be the same. There are a number of ways we could have gone on about this, but instead we have this absolute pathetic roster that can't do anything. And we have a head coach who was unqualified to be a head coach last year. She has not shown any proof of being a quality head coach since she still runs a college playbook that she doesn't even know how to manage without calling the same play 3 times in a row because it worked the first time or 2. I don't know what we're doing here. She doesn't know what we're doing here. No one really knows what we're doing here. All I can ask for is that Matt Ishbia actually notices what's going on with this team and cleans house soon.
I don't have any disagreements there, but what I will say is Sutton and Mo Jeff, very fun players, very fun hoopers.
Yes, they are. They are so much fun to watch. I hope they get traded to, I don't know, Chicago in the middle of the season. Yeah, I also hope Brittany Griner gets traded to Chicago.
Do you have anything else on Phoenix, Lincoln?
I would say that I haven't necessarily been impressed with their defensive schemes, but I don't know how much.
Defined schemes.
There is the issue that I don't know how much of the blame lies with the coaching there or with the fact that their highest paid player refuses to play defense that requires her to move for more than 3 seconds at a time.
Hey, we can walk and chew gum at the same time here.
They really struggle with having players who can be even passable on offense and defense at the same time. And 2 of their 4 best players are best at center. So it's just an extremely frustrating team and a really confusing situation. And I don't know what to do with any of it.
And they don't value the draft either.
They're like if you made a team into shooting. They're like if you took shooting variance and made it into team. But the shooting variance is like maybe our true talent 34% shooters will occasionally hit 50% for a game.
But
and that's how they won against the Lynx. The Lynx.
Which are tanking.
It helps if you hit 65% of your threes for the first half.
Yeah. They needed to do that to fend off the Lynx.
But thanks
for the same. If they have the same front office management in place at this point in time next year, I sincerely hope that they just barely miss the lottery so that we don't have to see any of these good players end up in just that career ender of a player development system.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks for making Lots of Basketball your first listen today. And on Maker's listen, second listen, game-to-game NBA. Every moment, every top performance, every result. Locked On Game to Game covers every game across the NBA with local analysis that only Locked On can deliver. Follow Game to Game on Locked On NBA, available on the Odyssey app, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts.